the guy that wrote Acceptance was the answer in the back of the big book, which is kind of cool. Maybe he'll touch on that. Anyway, I hope you guys give a big Valley Group welcome to Bob T.
Hi, my name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
It's good to be here tonight. It'd be any place when you're sober. You know, it doesn't make much difference. When I was asked a couple days ago, I think it was Sunday or Monday, Bill called me and asked me if I would speak. And he reminded me that I'd done it a couple of years ago. So I couldn't think of an excuse fast enough, so I agreed. And so I didn't have a lot of time to worry and fret. You know, I always get nervous when I speak. It's just a habit, or it's my nature. And so today I decided I'll just say a prayer to God. And if there's anything that he wants me to say to somebody here tonight, then he'll put the words in my mouth and I'll speak. So guess what? God doesn't have anything to say to you people. I've got a couple of little stories I'd like to tell you. One is about a woman that was on an airplane, and she started up a conversation with her seatmate, and she told this guy, she says, I'm a recent widow. My husband just died last week. And the guy says, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that. And she says, yeah. He died of, he said, what did he die of? And she says, oh, he died of alcoholism, according to the doctor. He had pancreatic cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, and he died going into DTs. So, I'm so sorry to hear that. Did he know about AA? Did he try AA? And she says, no, he wasn't that bad. there's another story about the guy that's in the bar. And he's having a hard time staying on the bar stool. He keeps falling off. And finally, the bartender says to one of his buddies, he says, can you take that guy home? He needs to get home. He's drunk. So this guy went over to the guy on the floor, and he helped him, half crawled and half carried him to his car. And they were driving down the street, and the drunk pointed out to where his house was. So he pulled up, and the guy couldn't get out of the car. The driver had to help him get out of the car. He climbs up the stairs and knocked, and then the guy that was assisting him knocked on the door and said, I brought your husband home. And she says, oh, well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. But where's his wheelchair? A lot of you, if you've been around for a while, have heard of Clancy. And Clancy died last year. He was 93 years old. And he'd been sober for 62 years. And he ran the mission there, Midnight Mission in L.A. for 50 years. One of the stories Clancy used to tell on himself was he had a call from a guy that told him, "Clancy, I'm going to kill myself. I just can't put up with life anymore. This trying to get sober is just not working for me." And he said, "Can you come over and talk to me?" And Clancy says, "Well, I'm speaking tonight. This is Friday night. I got a meeting to speak at. And I'm speaking on Saturday night and Sunday night, too. So if you're still alive on Monday, give me a call." So the guy called him on Monday, and he went over to see Clancy. And they talked and talked, and the guy started feeling better. He said, "You know, Clancy, I think I'm going to be okay." He said, "You really helped me. I appreciate it." Clancy says, "Oh, Jake, you're going to be all right." He said, "You're going to live a long and happy life." He said, "You'll probably be around to piss on my grave." And the guy says, "Oh, no, Clancy, I'd never do that." Clancy got kind of puffed up, you know. He said, "You see, when I was in the Army, I swore that I'd never stand in line for anything ever again." Well, enough of those little corny jokes. When I first got my first DUI, was an overnight stay in jail and a fine of $15 and court cost of $10. So a total of $25. Now, they had electricity back then, but it was quite a while ago. And my last DUI cost about $75,000. And half of that cost was a new car that I totaled. I was in L.A. They have SIG alerts, and that means major traffic interruptions. If you don't know what a SIG alert is. And I was a SIG alert on the 405 freeway in Carson. And what had happened is I was in the far left lane, fast lane, and a woman had blown a tire and had shot her car over three lanes of traffic, hit me in the rear end, and spun me around back across four lanes of traffic and hit a little curb, a little abutment, and it caused the car to roll, and it was rolled down a ravine. And I was down at the bottom of the ravine, and nobody would help me.
Kennel.
They were afraid that the car was going to catch on fire and explode. And so I'm down there fumbling around trying to get my head straight, and I look up, and I see a cop. So I crawl back into the car. I get into the, and I had to crawl in the passenger side. I couldn't get out the driver's side. I crawl back in through the passenger side, get in the glove box, get a little tube, a little spray can of a breath freshener, spray about 10 sprays in my mouth before I head up the hill. And, that didn't help. I still got arrested. And it was $35,000 for a car and $25,000 for a lawyer. Court costs were $5,000 and the fine was $2,500. So. Times change. To back up a little bit, how I got into this program, before I got into it, I didn't do anything spectacular in my early part of my life. I was very much driven by trying to succeed. And I got out of college and I went to school for, went to work for AT&T. And as a salesman, In 6 months, I was promoted to account salesman. And 6 months later, I was promoted to sales manager. And that was a pretty fast track. There was a guy that came to work for the company. He had a master's degree, and he started out at the same level that I had achieved after two promotions. So I thought, well, if I had a master's degree, I'd probably be a lot more promotable, move up faster. So that's what I did. I quit school. I quit work and went back, got an MBA. And I went to work for a company called Emerson Electric. They're into a lot of things you're probably familiar with, but not with the name of Emerson. They make incinerator garbage disposal, pulling chainsaws, Louisville ladder, Cincy thermostats. And times were good. And I got five promotions in 7 years. And I was a department head, and I was just one step below being an assistant vice president. And I quit the job to go to work for family. This guy was one of my mother's husbands. I don't call him my stepfather because my mother had several husbands, and I couldn't call them all stepdads. But he had offered me a percentage of the business if I came to work for him, so that's what I did. And a year later, they got divorced, and he saw me as a threat because their divorce was not friendly. And he thought I was spying on him to report to my mother, which I wasn't, but it didn't make any difference. So I left that company, and that's when things started to really go to crap. I couldn't get another job. I was just having a hard time. The only thing I kept doing steady was the drink. And I thought about what I was going to do, and nothing came to mind. So I decided I'll start working on myself and improve my own self-being, because I had high cholesterol and I was a smoker and I was, of course, a drinker. So I made this decision to quit smoking, start running 5 miles a day, get a low-fat diet, quit drinking, and lose 20 pounds. I did all those things except quit drinking. And I only went about 10 days without drinking, and I decided I'll just have one drink a day. But I didn't have decided what size, so I took a 12-ounce water glass and decided that'd be it. So that was my one drink a day. And that lasted. I started keeping track. One drink. Well, then it started to be two. And you know, after a month of that, I said, what the hell is this? I just quit that and went back to drinking like I always did. And nothing got any better except my health. I quit smoking. But I just didn't feel good. And I started going to doctors. And I went to a lot of different doctors. One for my back, one for my stomach, one for my muscles, internist and specialist. And not one doctor ever mentioned to me, asked me if I drank or told me I shouldn't drink, ever talked about it. And finally, My last resort was, I'll go to a shrink. Maybe he can help me. So that's what I did. I called and scheduled an appointment with this psychiatrist. And before I saw him, I had decided that I was going to probably tell him a little bit more about myself. And I had seen shrinks in the past, and I never told them anything. I figured for how much you're paying them, they ought to figure it out, you know. So I'll tell this guy that I might have a drinking problem. And I did. And he told me, he says, "You got a drinking problem. I can't help you." And I thought, how strange. You know, most psychiatrists, you go to them, you got a drinking problem, well, come right in, we'll be able to help you. We'll work on issues that are related to causing you to drink, and you find out why your mother didn't love you as a child, and you'll find out all this stuff that causes you to drink, and then you'll be okay. But he just said, "I can't help you." He said, "If you've got a drinking problem, you need to go to AA. And I looked at him. He said, "My son's an alcoholic." He says, "He goes to a meeting over in Fullerton called Drop the Rock. He's been going for about 5 years. He's sober." So I decided, okay, I'll give it a try. So that was I'd been on a big bender on a Sunday with two bottles of champagne, and Monday was a sober up day. Tuesday was meeting with the doctor, and Wednesday I started on my journey in AA. And I went to, I didn't go to the Drop the Rock. I didn't want too much information from this guy, so I found my own meeting. But I went to a meeting, and I started going to meetings. And I didn't have a big agenda because I wasn't working, so I had a lot of time on my hands. And so I would start out in the morning at 6 a.m. I would be at a meeting in Tustin. At 7:30, I'd be at a meeting at the Santa Ana Elks Lodge for a meeting. 9 o'clock, I'd be at a church meeting over in Tustin. 12 o'clock, I'd be at the Knights of Columbus meeting in Tustin downtown. At 5 o'clock, 5:30, I'd be at the church in Tustin for a meeting. And that's what I started doing. I was doing 120 meetings in 30 days. I got it mixed up as far as 90 and 90. I didn't get that right. But they had told me that I needed to get a sponsor, and so I sensed that that was urgent, so I started asking people. And I asked this one guy, he was a truck driver, but he had some other issues, and we just didn't hit it off. He wanted to go to Utah and live in a teepee with some Indians on a reservation. And that didn't seem to me like anything I wanted to be involved in. So I didn't have a sponsor. And one of the women at the church meeting said to me, "There's a meeting tomorrow night, Wednesday night, down in Laguna. Dr. Paul will be there." He said, "Do you have a sponsor?" I said, "No, not now." The truck driver was gone. And so why don't you ask him to be your sponsor? "Dr. Paul's a big shot in AA. He's not going to want to sponsor me. I'm just a little nobody." So I went to the meeting, and she was there. She said after the meeting, "Why don't you ask Dr. Paul now? He's over there in the back of the building." Ask him. "Well, go on, kid. You don't have anything to lose." So I got in line, because there was a line to talk to him. I waited my turn. I came up to him. I said, "Hi, my name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic. I wanted to ask you a question. I wanted to know if you'd consider sponsoring me." And he looked at me and he didn't say anything for a little bit. He said, "How long you been sober?" I said, "Well, about 6 months." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what. Here's my number. Give me a call. And we'll talk about it." He said, "Call me tomorrow." So I did. And I started calling him. And things started to get better. Dr. Paul had his story in the big book. It was in page 449 in the third edition, which I come in with, and it was called Dr. Alcoholic Addict. And I guess the powers that be didn't like that. So the fourth edition, they kept his story, but they changed it to Acceptance is the Answer. Anyway, he wrote this article on acceptance. And it's one of the most powerful statements I've ever read. In fact, I have a copy of it, and if you indulge me, I'd like to read it to you. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact in my life, unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as to what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. Sponsorship was very important to Dr. Paul. He told me, after I'd been in for a little bit, been with him for a little bit, he told me there were five things he wanted me to do every day. And the first one, he wanted me to call him every day. Well, at first that was hard, you know, because he didn't want to call in the morning because he might be sleeping in. He didn't want to call at noon because he'd probably having lunch. He didn't want to call in the afternoon. He might be taking a nap. Didn't want to call at dinner at 5 because he'd probably eaten supper. And at 8 o'clock, it's too late. So the day's gone. He forgot to call him. And so I just start calling him. The second thing he told me to do is go to a meeting every day. He didn't say that. He said, go to a meeting like you drank. If you drank 2 times a week, go to 2 meetings a week. Well, for me, it was every day. The third thing he told me, he says, I want you to be more transparent in your life. He said, all your life, you've built up walls and closed doors and kept people out. He said, when you do that, you can't find any joy in life. He said, you need to tear down the walls and tear down, open the doors, open the windows. Let people see who you are. Be transparent in your life. My God, that was so foreign to what I was brought up with. Be transparent. I was brought up secrets. Everything was a secret. And the fourth thing he told me to do was to help somebody every day. He said, do something for somebody else. Not yourself, but somebody else. Every day. And don't take credit for it. What? Who don't take credit for it. I mean, that's why I'd help somebody. I like to know how I did. Big shot. He said, it doesn't have to be something big. It can be something small. It could be as much as after a meeting, going up to somebody and telling them that you like what they shared. It helped you. Made you feel good. Or go up to somebody that shared some sad story and say, how can I help you? How can I make you feel better? But do something. There's somebody every day, and don't take credit for it. Fifth thing he told me to do was to read something out of the big book every day. He said, it doesn't have to be a chapter or read the whole book. He said, read a page. But read something every day. Well, you know what? There's 575 pages in that big book, and there's not one picture. There's not a picture of Bill W. or Dr. Bob or nobody. But that's what I started doing. And that kept me on the path. When things got tough, he said, these are habits. He said, you do them until they become habits, and they're not hard to do. He said, it's just like you get good habits or you get into bad habits. He said, the drinking and not facing your problems is a bad habit if you've done all your life. He said, try this new way of living. So I did that. And life got better. I like to think that when I came in this program, I stayed, that I didn't go back out. And then as clarity continued in my life, I realized that that wasn't quite true, because in 1984, I got a DUI in L.A. And that's when California started to crack down on getting serious about drunk driving. And the attorney thought it'd be a good idea if I went to some AA meetings, because it would help my case with the judge. So I said, okay, I'll go to some meetings. Well, I worked in Paramount, so I found... I don't remember how I found it now, but anyway, there was a meeting at Paramount at 12 o'clock. The name of the place was the Paramount Alano Club, but it was affectionately referred to as the Snake Pit. And there was a reason for that. I went to this meeting, and it was a big room. Almost, not quite as big as this room, but it was a big room. And there was all kinds of chaos going on, just ruckus. Two guys were playing keep away with an old-timer's hat. There was two or three guys that were in a pushing contest in the side of the building. There were two women on the floor rolling over each other, beating each other up with their fist, slugging each other on the ground. And I thought, what the hell? I look around all these signs. Easy does it. Think. One day at a time. Then I saw the one that I liked that said exit. And I took it. And I never went back. So, when I had about 5 years of sobriety, I had a job, but it wasn't a job that I really liked that much. And I became aware that there was a job with the company that I formerly worked with, the Overhead Door Corporation. And that's the same company that when I left there, I didn't have a I had a Corvette, but it was in storage, and I didn't want to drive it. They let me keep that car until I went to work for this other company that as a division manager of their construction and door department division. And I get a company car there. So that company car that they let me use is the one that I crashed on the 405 freeway. Yeah. They never said a word to me. They didn't send me a bill. They didn't say anything. So now they've got this job opening. And I interview. And then I got to thinking, I wonder if he knows about the accident I had. I wonder if I should tell him. Well, that became a big question in my mind. Should I tell him? I brought it up at an AA meeting. Well, that's fun because you always give advice in an AA meeting. And there'll be, if there's 100 people, there'll be 100 different ideas of what you should do. So, as a last resort, and it was a lot of times, I'll call my sponsor. I'll ask him. So, that's what I did. I told him the situation. So I don't know if I should tell these guys about my accident or not. He said, I don't think that's what you need to talk to them about. So what do you mean? He says, I think you need to make amends to that company. You destroyed their property and they trusted you. They gave you an automobile after you left them to use until you took another one at another job. I think you really need to make amends. That wasn't why I called him. I didn't want to hear that. So I stewed over it for about, I don't know, a few days. I decided, well, okay. I'll tell you what, I'm gonna call him. But I decided I would call him on Friday afternoon. Well, in this particular industry, and probably more than just this one industry, there's hardly anybody around on Friday afternoon. Everybody's gone. And that's when I decided I'd call. And if he wasn't there, then I wouldn't tell him about the accident. So I call this number. Guy answers, Todd Martin. Oh, shit. I said, oh, hi, Todd. This is Bob Taze. I said, yeah, I said, you interviewed a couple of weeks ago. I said, unfortunately, Bob, we filled that job with another person. So I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but that's not why I called. I called you to tell you I wanted to make amends to the company for something that happened 6 years ago. And I told him about the accident. And I said, I'm an alcoholic, and I did a lot of things that I'm sorry for. And the only way I can do better is to just make amends and move forward. And I said, that's what I'm doing with you. He said, that's interesting. Did you say you're an alcoholic? He said, my son was an alcoholic. He said, my son died 5 years ago in an avalanche in Colorado when he was on a ski trip. Well, actually, he was living in Colorado. He said, they never found the body. They just had a memorial. And when my wife and I went back there, he said, these people from AA just came out of the movie. And they did everything for us. One guy was in AA. He owned a hotel. He insisted we stay there, no charge. Other people gave us food. And they just gave us all kinds of information about our son that we didn't know, good stuff that he did. He was sponsoring a lot of people, doing a great job. He said it was a wonderful experience. And he said, 2 years ago, they found our son's body. And we went back for the burial. He said those same people were still around. And they still helped us. And they still extended the wide range of courtesies and and help and assistance. He said, I'll always remember this. He said, one of them gave me these little coins. He said they had years on them, 1 year, 2 years. He said, I guess you call them chips, is what they told me. I said, yeah. He said, I've got my son Todd's, or my son John's chip in my pocket today. I carry it. He said, so I'm telling you, Bob, you're in a good group. You're in a good organization. He says, I have no doubt that you're going to find a job. It'll be something that you like and you'll enjoy. And he was right. A couple months later, I did. But I'll never forget Todd Martin and what he told me. Another thing that my sponsor used to talk to me about was he said there's four different types of sobriety. He said, it's kind of like a baseball diamond. He said, you go to first base, that's your physical sobriety. Second base is your mental sobriety. Third base is your spiritual, is your emotional sobriety. And home play is your spiritual sobriety. All of these sobrieties are different. And you have to address all of them at different points in your life. Well, I didn't have any problem with my physical sobriety. I was pretty much grounded. I didn't need to take a drink. And I didn't think I was going to drink a six-pack of Bud and jump out of a bush on a nun or something. I have that under control. My mental sobriety, there's things that run the house that, you know, have to be done. The mortgage has to be paid. Bills have to be paid. Garbage has to go out. All this kind of stuff. I have that under control pretty much. Emotional sobriety or spiritual sobriety, I have a pretty good relationship with my higher power. I ask him for things, and he gives me things. Sometimes they're the same thing. Other times they're not. I kind of go with the flow. I figure, Garth Brooks said it better than I can. He had a song that it was popular, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. I thank God for unanswered prayers. It's a song. And so anyway, with my spiritual sobriety, I do well. It's my emotional sobriety that gives me a real problem. I just have a... One big problem I have is I don't like to be told what to do. I can be ready to take the garbage out. I can have the waste basket down here ready to pull the sock out and go out. My wife will say, you need to take the garbage out. Well, I got to find something to do for a half hour so I don't... before I take it out, because I don't want her to think that I did it because she told me. I was in the bank the other day, and I was pulling out of the parking lot. I got in the car, and I glanced down at my cell phone. I saw that I had a message, so I read it. It opened up, and then I was going to answer that. And I hear a toot, toot. I look out. There's this guy. Get out of there. Come on. This guy wanted my parking place. Well, we got to sit there till one of us dies because I ain't going out. I don't like these signs. And you put your card in a credit card reader and it says, remove card rapidly. Well, I don't want them to tell me that. I don't want to do that. What if I want to remove it slowly? What if it says, relax, take a break, do this when you want to? But it doesn't. And I was at Costco, I put my card in, said remove card rapidly. I said, screw this. So, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. I finally pulled it out. Nothing happened. I put it back in. Nothing happened. Put it back in, and this time I put it back in and pulled it out fast, like I said, to see a attendant. So I get the attendant over there. He's tapping on it and farting around with it. He says, yeah, this machine's all screwed up. You're going to have to go find another machine. So if you want to shut down a machine, remove your card very slowly. The other problem I have is driving. People just don't drive like I think they should. They don't follow my rules, or my rule, Robert's rules of the road. They follow some other cockamamie thing that involves cutting me off. And you ever have somebody cut you off and you just want to catch up with them, give them the look? But I've got better. I don't do that anymore. I don't chase them past my exit. One time when I was talking to my sponsor, he told me one of my character defects I needed to work on was that I was too judgmental. I thought about it for a minute. I judged that he didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I'm not judgmental. So, about a week later, I was on a business trip. I had to go to Las Vegas for sales calls. And wherever I traveled, I would line up meetings to go to wherever I was going to be. So I went to this meeting in Vegas called the Kiss Club. Keep it simple, stupid. And in the front, it used to be a bar. So in the front is a bar area known as restroom type stuff. And in the back is a big meeting room. And over on one wall of this meeting room, and the wall about that size, is a mural. And it has pictures of guys laying down with empty bottles, strewn around, garbage, little kids in ragged clothes, guy with a needle hanging out of his arm, women in despair. Just a terrible image it was an image of addiction is what it was, and alcoholism. And in big letters, six-foot-high letters across the mural, said, "Judge not." What the hell is my sponsor band here? I always remember that. I guess it's time to close. And in closing, I'll just say that this program is meant to be enjoyed. There's a story that Dr. Paul used to tell me about this meeting with God when you die. And to see if you're going to be accepted into heaven or not. So this guy came up for his interview with God, and God says, "Well, did you enjoy life?" I said, "What are you asking me that for?" He said, "Son, I've worked like the devil." He said, "I've worked very hard to give you things in life and to try to make your life good. I just want to know, did you enjoy it?" He said, "Well, you know, not that much, really. It wasn't that great." He said, "Well, you know, if you didn't enjoy life down there, you're probably not going to go, you're not going to enjoy life up here. So you might as well go to hell." So my message to you tonight is to enjoy your life, live it well, and like it, whether you like it or not. Thank you.